Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Take One. This is your host, Juan Pablo Sa, talking to you from the CITR station at UBC Point Grey Campus, located in the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. Today, I have a very special episode for all of you, and that is the case, because in under 1 hour, I'm going to be attempting to review all 22 movies that I watched last year at the 43rd edition of the Vancouver International Film Festival. That said, before I do so, there is one also very important thing that I have to mention, and that is this is actually a Fundrive episode. Right now, Fundrive is happening here at CITR. You know, we are trying to incentivize as many of you listeners to please, if you can, if you like our content, please donate to CITR so that we can keep the lights on and we can keep doing this content that you so very much enjoy. If you feel compelled to donate, please go right now to donate to CITR.ca. That is www.donatetocitr.ca. If you donate, there are different, you know, tiers of how much money you would donate. And depending on how much you donate, there is swag that you can win. There are prizes that you can get by donating. So in all honesty, this sounds like a win-win situation. If you like our content, if you like what you do, if you want to support us, and if you want to win some swag, please consider donating right now by going to donatetocitr.ca. Now, let's start the reviews of everything that I watched at the Vancouver International Film Festival with the very first movie that I saw, which is Suleiman's Story. Now, this is a great movie that I very much enjoyed. The lead performance by Abu Sangare was truly an exceptional performance, one of my favorites of the year. Now, you might be wondering, what is this movie about? Well, Suleiman's Story tells the story of an African immigrant trying to make life work in Paris. He is desperate. He is constantly trying to live day by day, trying his best. Things don't go according to plan. People take advantage of him. It is stressful. It is disheartening. It is sad, but sometimes hopeful. And as I mentioned, I thought this movie was great. The performance was incredible. Something that I would like to mention is this movie feels like a great companion piece to 2023's Io Capitano, which was Italy's submission for Best International Feature last year, during last year's Oscars. You know, Io Capitano was a movie that told the story of African immigrants making their way to Europe. So, you know, it's all about the very perilous journey that they have to go on. This one takes off where Io Capitano ends. You know, Io Capitano is all about the journey. This one is all about what happens once they arrive. What happens once they make it to Europe and they try to get the life that they so dreamed of when they were back home in Africa. And, you know, it shows that the perilous journey doesn't stop when they get there. There's still a lot of obstacles in front of them, and life is not, you know, all peachy and nice, as peachy as nice as they expected. Yeah, this is a great movie. Honestly, the highest praise that I could give it is this movie felt to me, in my opinion, like a modern day retelling or a modern day version of Bicycle Thieves. You know, the incredibly influential 1948 Italian neorealist movie by Vittorio De Sica. If you've seen Bicycle Thieves, you might imagine what I'm talking about. After all, both of these movies explore characters who are, in all honesty, desperate, who are trying their best, but things don't go according to plan. And both of these movies explore the idea that sometimes, quote-unquote, evil deeds, you know, are not necessarily committed by evil people who are rotten to the core, but just simply by people who are desperate and are trying their best to survive. So yes, if I would give a score to Suleiman's Story, I would give it an 8 out of 10. I think it's a great movie. Now, moving on, the next movie on the list is To a Land Unknown, and it was pretty amusing to watch both of these movies in a row because thematically they are quite similar. You know, Suleiman's Story is all about an African immigrant trying to survive in Europe, and To a Land Unknown is about Palestinian immigrants trying to survive in Europe. You know, Suleiman's Story is in Paris, To a Land Unknown is set in Greece. And I thought To a Land Unknown was a very good movie with some very good performances and a very good screenplay. There's not much negative that I would point out about the movie, but at the same time, there's not much exceptional that I would truly, truly highlight. I liked it. I enjoyed it. In my opinion, Suleiman's Story did a better job at getting you invested in the main character, in the story, and what he's going through, and really rooting for him and wanting him to succeed. I believe Suleiman's Story did a better job at that than To a Land Unknown. But still, I enjoyed the movie. If I were to give it a score, I would give it a 7 out of 10 because I think it is a very good movie. Next on the list, I watched The Seed of the Sacred Fig. Now, this is an Iranian movie by Iranian filmmaker Mohammad Rasoulov. I am not familiar with this guy's body of work, but, you know, of course, I've heard a lot about him. And what piqued my interest about the movie was mainly the fact that, you know, Mohammad Rasoulov shot this movie in secret. This movie is an extremely powerful indictment against the Iranian government, against the Iranian regime. So, of course, he couldn't do it publicly. He couldn't make the movie with officials, government officials, knowing that he was. So he shot it in secret without anyone knowing. And right after the movie was made, he was exiled. He was exiled from the country and he had to leave. So that piqued my interest and made me really want to go watch this movie. And this movie, in all honesty, was incredibly frustrating. Because the first two-thirds of The Seed of the Sacred Fig, in my opinion, are an absolute masterpiece. The first two-thirds of this movie are some of the best minutes of cinema that I've seen, that I saw in 2024. They were truly, truly incredible. An incredibly powerful indictment against the Iranian government, as I mentioned. Some great performances. The way this movie uses archival social media footage to, you know, show us that this is not just a piece of fiction, but it is rooted in reality, was truly incredible and deeply moving. And what I love the most about the first two-thirds of this film is that those first two-thirds are all about this family that is slowly being torn apart. You know, they're being forced to clash against each other due to the pressure and the oppression of the Iranian government. That said, even though the family is clashing against each other, you're still rooting for them. You still want them to succeed and you still like them. Yes, some of the people in the family might be misguided and might be doing things that, you know, we know are not the best, but we know they're coming from a good place. We know that this people, that these characters are simply products of their environment, and we're still somewhat rooting for the family unit. That said, the third act, the movie kind of completely reinvents itself to the point where in the third act, it becomes really obvious that this is no longer a story about a family that is being torn apart by the Iranian government, but this is a movie about a family that in and of itself is a microcosm for the Iranian government. And that could be interesting, and that sounds cool. And, you know, I wish it would have worked more for me. But in my opinion, by making the family a microcosm of the Iranian government, you just lose the nuance. You know, in the first two acts, you were rooting for all the characters, and you know, you still believe that there was, you know, some good in them, even though they were misguided. But here in the third act, you know, characters that were misguided in the first two just simply become evil and become just a representation of the oppressive nature of the government. And it just, in my opinion, it heightens everything to a point that just wasn't necessary and didn't feel earned. To be honest, the third act, there were many points that I found, quite frankly, a bit ridiculous. You know, there are characters who suddenly become professional electricians out of nowhere and audio engineers out of nowhere. There are conveniently placed speakers out of nowhere. And also, oh my God, there is a shot in the third act of this movie that I generally couldn't believe they were doing it. You know, the Scooby-Doo shot where, you know, the Scooby gang is running away from a monster and then they're like running through different doors and then you see Daphne popping up of one door and Scooby and Shaggy and they all pop up of different doors and then the monster is also popping up from different doors. And, you know, it's a funny shot. We've seen that in Hanna-Barbera comics, Hanna-Barbera cartoons from our childhood. And I couldn't believe when they recreated that shot here in The Seed of the Sacred Fig. I know that wasn't the intention. That wasn't probably the intention of the filmmaker. But, oh my God, in my opinion, it looked a bit ridiculous. And yes, the ending just keeps rising and rising and rising into melodramatic heights that, in my opinion, just weren't necessary. I would have much preferred this movie to maintain, you know, to remain relatively subtle and relatively understated and to keep the powerful indictment of the Iranian government without sacrificing your nuanced characters in order to do so. That said, even though I didn't like the third act of Seed of the Sacred Fig, I think the first two acts of this movie are truly exceptional filmmaking. And considering that, it all levels out. And if I were to give it a score, I would give it a 7 out of 10. Now, the next movie that I would like to review and the next movie that I watched at the 43rd edition of the Vancouver International Film Festival was Presence. Now, Presence was directed by Steven Soderbergh, who is the director of the Oceans movies, Oceans 11, 12, and 13. He also directed Magic Mike. He also directed Eric Brockovich, Contagion, and, you know, a bunch of other films. And I'm not going to lie, I was disappointed in Presence. You know, I read what the movie was about and I got really excited. Basically, this is a ghost story told from the perspective of the ghost, but it is not only told from the perspective of the ghost, but the whole movie is told in first-person POV. So the camera that you're watching the movie through is meant to be the ghost. You, the viewer, are meant to be the ghost as you're observing this family and moving from room to room. I thought that was really exciting. I love it when movies go above and beyond to try something new, to do something like this that is truly different from what we usually see on the day-to-day in movie theaters. You know, I'm familiar with movies told in first person. I haven't seen that many of them, and when they come, it feels so exciting. For instance, you know, Hardcore Henry, Enter the Void by Gaspar Noé. It was just, you know, an exceptional piece of cinema. And then most recently, Nickel Boys. Oh, I also thought used the first-person POV extremely well. But here, Presence, in my opinion, was just dull, boring, the acting felt stale, and the screenplay is just extremely predictable. There were so many times in the first half of the movie where a character says something or an object in the house gets introduced, and you instantly know what's going to happen, you know where that's going, I wonder what's going to happen, and then the rest of the movie you just feel like you're just checking boxes, you're going through the motions, you know what's happening, and it's coming, and it happens. And then another negative about the movie, in my opinion, was I thought the ghost, its abilities, what it can do and how it can intervene in the real world, I thought all of that was incredibly inconsistent. And, you know, I get it. It's a ghost. You know, it's an ambiguous entity, amorphous entity. So I guess its abilities can be ambiguous, but this was just too much. You know, sometimes when it didn't matter to the story, it would interact with the real world, but sometimes when it was crucial for the ghost to interact with the real world, it kind of forgot that it had those abilities. You know, that said, the first-person VOV is kind of interesting, and there is something to be said about a story, a horror, a ghost story being told from the perspective of the ghost. You know, if I were to give it a score, I would give it a 5 out of 10. I think it's dull. I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's an awful movie. I just think it's meh. It exists. Now, the next movie that I watched at this year's Vancouver International Film Festival was Conclave, directed by Edward Berger. Now, Conclave is a movie about a group of cardinals that are, you know, cardinals that are sequestered in the Vatican City as they try to elect a new pope. And it is a movie that really delves deep into the inner politics of the Vatican, you know, the inner politics of the Catholic Church, you know, conservatives, liberals, the different positions that all of these cardinals have. And I thought this was an extremely compelling movie with, honestly, some of the best dialogue, some of the best screenplay dialogue that I heard in the entirety of 2024. There is a part where Ralph Fiennes, who, by the way, plays, you know, the main cardinal, the one that is in charge of making sure the elections go according to plan. There is a scene where he gives a speech, where he's talking to all the other cardinals before the elections begin, and oh my god, just that speech in and of itself makes this movie worthy of a best screenplay nomination or win at the Oscars. Yeah, truly, truly excellent movie. As I mentioned, this is directed by Edward Berger, who previously directed All Quiet on the Western Front, which was another exceptional movie. I'm talking about the remake, of course, not the original. I like this guy. I like what he's doing. I thought the cinematography in Conclave was exceptional. I thought the music was amazing. Now, I do have a couple of nitpicks, and those are mostly with the third act. I still enjoyed it. I like the third act. And I like the plot twist. You know, there is a plot twist at the end of the movie, and I know it hasn't worked for some people. For me, it did. It felt earned. It felt warranted. It wasn't truly necessary, but it worked. You know, I enjoyed it, and I went with it, and it caught me by surprise. So I'm all in favor of that. That said, I do believe the third act heightens things. a bit too much, to the point where it's just not necessary. And what I mean by this, and this is not a spoiler because you can see it in the trailer, there is a moment in the third act where there is an explosion. I just don't think this movie needed an explosion. You know, this is a drama, you know, a drama where a bunch of people are trapped in a room discussing, debating, you know, ideologies and philosophies clashing against each other. I think adding an explosion, it was unnecessary. In my opinion, it was unnecessary. And now the last little nitpick that I have about this movie is I feel at the end, everything was tied up a bit too neatly and a bit too quickly. You know, this whole movie, throughout this whole film, the point that the film is making is, yeah, humans have different interests, humans have different opinions, and regardless of what you think, you know, it's baffling that people with different points of views, they both equally think they are in the right. And it is a complicated world, and politics are complicated, diplomacy is complicated, so it felt a bit unrealistic when at the end, suddenly, they all came together, and suddenly we have a consensus, and let's see what happens. I like the ambiguous nature of the very ending of the movie, like after the plot twist. I like how ambiguous that is and how we don't know what's going to happen next. I think that's really cool. But the election, the result of the election in and of itself, I thought was tied up a bit too fast. But, you know, I still enjoyed it. I still enjoyed it. But all in all, Conclave is just an exceptional film. And if I were to give it a score, I would give it an 8 out of 10. Now, the next movie that I would like to review is 78 Days. 78 Days is a movie that follows a family. It follows a group of girls and their mother as they are trying to survive the 1999 NATO bombings of Yugoslavia. Their father is currently fighting somewhere. They don't know where he is. He hasn't come back. And they are just waiting for him as they, you know, constantly live in fear of something bad potentially happening and of them potentially getting bombed. And I thought this movie was great. You know, this film is told in the found footage style, which is, you know, it's a style that we've seen before in Cloverfield, Paranormal Activity, Late Night with the Devil, you know, those sort of movies. Those are found footage films. That said, what I really enjoyed about this found footage film is I don't think I've ever seen a found footage movie that is not a horror film. And I thought that was very novel, very exciting. And I thought this film did an incredible job at making it feel like found footage. There were times where I paused my screener. I watched this movie in a screener link. And I couldn't believe that this wasn't a documentary, that this was actually scripted and planned, because everything feels so organic and natural. The performances just, they truly feel like children just living. It doesn't feel like lines of dialogue that were written by someone else, written by an adult for children to read. It blew me away. You know, I think it's a great movie. And if I were to give it a score, I would also give it an 8 out of 10. Now, before we keep going with my reviews of everything I watched at VIFF, it is time we go into a little break. And once again, this is Fundrive. Please, if you like what we do and if you would like to support us here at CITR, please donate right now at donate2citr.ca. That is www.donate2citr.ca. Now, a little thing that I have to read about Fundrive so that you guys know. Calling all super freaks. The blazing disco inferno that keeps CITR and Discorder magazine alight needs to be fueled. We need your support to help us continue disco dancing our way into the hearts of the masses. This year, we're asking our community to throw their fuel on the Discorder inferno and help us raise $20,000. So once again, if you like what we do and you want to support us, please donate at donate to CITR.ca. But now, without further ado, it is time for us to go to a little ad break, and here we go.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam speaking Musqueam people. Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiyam,
Nisiyaya, and the Skakuya, Talit, Tim, Homasque, Mustail.
Devon Cole is a woman in total control. Unafraid and unashamed, Cole has burst onto the scene through her expertly crafted feminist pop anthems, packaging social truths into repeat-worthy bops. This is the era of fempop, and Devon Cole is an artist you don't want to miss. Join Devon Cole on her Two Shades Blonder tour and see her in Vancouver at the Biltmore Cabaret on March 16th. To find out more and get your tickets, visit admitone.com. That's admitone.com. I should be smitten, but I'm a fiend for the troublesome boy who's driving me wild. Keeping me on the tip of my tongue.
Hey, it's Myself Autonomy from Copy Paste Radio. You feeling like a super freak? You feeling that disco fever? That Discorder Inferno? Well, hit us up. We're collecting donations for Fun Drive. It's on right now. Go to donate to CITR.ca. Show me a freak.
We want to know if you can handle the heat this fun drive. From now until February 14th, we're looking at raising $20,000 for Discorder Magazine. Now, what's that $20,000 going to do? It's going to let you boogie on down to our website. That's right, Disco Magazine is going to be even more accessible online with our new website. But don't worry, you'll still get to boogie with Disco in real life with even more locations as we expand across the city. And finally, with your help, we get to preserve every Discorder magazine that's ever been. So to all the alumni out there and every generation of Discorder magazine lovers, we're making sure to treat you right this Valentine's Day by preserving the goods and all the artistry Disco Magazine has conjured through the years. Disco never dies on our watch, so head to www.donate2citr.ca to keep Disco Magazine grooving.
Welcome back to Take One. This is your host, Juan Pablo Sá, talking to you from CITR 101.9 FM. Okay, I hope you all enjoyed that little ad break. Now, without further ado, it is time to keep going. The next movie that I watched in the 43rd edition of the Vancouver International Film Festival was A Different Man. And this is a movie about a guy with a facial deformity. This person is played by Sebastian Stan in an incredible performance from him. And he feels like the facial deformity that he has is not allowing him to reach his full potential. So, you know, through a sci-fi plot, he is able to get rid of his facial deformity in order to become, as the title of the movie implies, a different man. And then he starts looking like Sebastian Stan, and he's excited to try to live life now that he no longer has a facial deformity. But as soon as he tries to, you know, as soon as he starts to try, a different person arrives with a similar facial deformity to the one that he used to have. And this person just achieves everything that he always dreamed of achieving, even though he has a facial deformity that he used to think would have been an obstacle in doing so. So yeah, this is a science fiction character study dark comedy that is very much about a guy that it feels like the universe is just playing a cosmic joke on him. And, you know, I thought this movie was very good. I thought it had some incredible performances. I like how it blends genres, as I mentioned, you know, the three sci-fi, character study, and dark comedy. That said, for me, subjectively, the humor elements, the comedic elements of this film, for me, subjectively, they didn't quite work. In all honesty, I think the best way I could put it is this movie reminded me a lot of last year's Dream Scenario, which was the A24 science fiction dark comedy movie starring Nick Cage. And I feel very similarly in from Dream Scenario as I do feel for A Different Man. I think they're very good, but in my opinion, the comedic elements didn't quite work, and I wish the movie would have taken itself a bit more seriously, because I do like the premise. Considering that, if I were to give it a score, I would give it a 7 out of 10. It's a very good movie. Now, the next film that I watched at last year's Vancouver International Film Festival was a documentary that is currently nominated for Best Documentary Feature at this year's Academy Awards, and this documentary is called No Other Land. I'll just read the synopsis of this documentary, because I want to make sure that this information is delivered accurately. And I quote, "This film, made by a Palestinian-Israeli collective, shows the destruction of the occupied West Bank's Masafer Yatta by Israeli soldiers and the alliance which develops between the Palestinian activist Basil and Israeli journalist Yuval." End quote. So yes, this is a movie documenting the events leading up to 2023, and it is truly, truly, truly one of the most powerful, disheartening, and disturbing pieces of media that I've ever seen. It is a movie that fills you with impotence, that it's baffling to see what this movie shows you, and to know that it's still going on, and there's not much that has been done about it. I think this is not only a truly exceptional piece of cinema, I think this is movies like this is what why documentaries were invented. I think this is easily the best documentary film that I've seen in 2024. Not only that, but I would also dare to say that this is the most important movie in 2024 when it comes to its relevance to what's happening around the world, and when it comes to a movie that I believe everyone should watch to, at the very least, you know, understand a different perspective. I think this is an important movie. And, you know, Roger Ebert, you know, the famous critic, has a great quote where he talks about movies being empathy machines, you know, movies being machines that generate empathy. I truly think that is one of the powers of cinema, one of the powers of watching movies. And I truly think that is why we should feel enticed to watch films that are told from different perspectives other than ours. This is an absolutely devastating, harrowing, powerful movie, but it is an absolute masterpiece. And if I were to give it a score, I would give it a 10 out of 10. Now, the next movie I watched at VIFF was Flow, which is a Latvian animated movie about a cat that is roaming a humanless world as the cat tries to escape a flood, and in the process, it stumbles into animals, and it befriends new creatures, and they all create this found family unit. I thought this movie was very cute. I thought the animation was striking. The animation was truly, truly beautiful. I love the visual storytelling at display in this film. The fact that not a single line of dialogue is spoken, and yet so much is said. And yes, it is a very, very cute film about found family, about coming together, about looking past our differences and coming together as a group in order to achieve more. I thought it was very cute. Unfortunately, I do not think it is as profound as some people online seem to think. I enjoyed it. I thought it was very good and very cute and, you know, beautiful animation and beautiful music. But, you know, I struggle to see the deeper layers that some people seem to be finding in this film. If I were to give it a score, I would give it a 7 out of 10. I think it's a very good movie. Now, up next is The Piano Lesson. This one is directed by Malcolm Washington, who is Denzel Washington's son. And this is based on an August Wilson play. So this is part of, you know, Netflix has been making movie adaptations of the August Wilson plays. It started with Fences, starring Denzel Washington. Then we had Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, starring Viola Davis and Chadwick Boseman in an incredible performance. And now we have The Piano Lesson. And I thought The Piano Lesson was a very good movie. I thought the performances were truly exceptional. I thought the movie felt like a theater play, and it behaved like a theater play, but that's fine by me. After all, it is based on a theater play. I think the only negatives that I have about this movie is I feel there are some supernatural elements that are introduced throughout the movie but are most prevalent in the third act that, in my opinion, I don't think they worked that well. You know, considering that, I would also give this movie a 7 out of 10. I think it is very good, but I think there are some elements that are holding it back from achieving true excellence. Now, the next movie that I watched is Bird, directed by Andrea Arnold. And this follows a young child, a young girl, who is just, you know, trying her best to live from the day to day. She is coming of age. She is in the middle of puberty. She is confused. She, you know, she doesn't really know what to do with her life. Her father, played by Barry Keoghan, her father had her when he was very young. So he also doesn't really know how to be a father. He also doesn't really know what to do. They're both trying to make it work. But of course, all human beings are flawed. So they make mistakes along the way. This girl is dealing with a lot of trauma. She's dealing with a lot of troubles in her life. And she constantly fantasizes of escaping, of going somewhere. And, you know, they use the very commonly used symbol of the bird to represent, you know, freedom and the desire to be free, the desire to go somewhere else, to have a different life. And, you know, as soon as this girl's life becomes complicated and traumatic, she suddenly encounters this person, this dude, who refers to himself as Bird. And throughout the movie, you don't know if this is an actual person, if this is a figment of her imagination, if this is a shape-shifting bird, if this is a magical creature. But, you know, he's there and he helps her deal with the shit in her life. And I thought this movie was very good. I like Andrea Arnold. You know, American Honey was an exceptional movie. And I haven't seen Fish Tank, but, you know, she also directed that one. And I think what I like the most about this movie is we're seeing Andrea Arnold coming into a genre that she doesn't usually play in. You know, we are used to seeing Andrea Arnold making very realistic, you know, raw, realistic movies. But now here in Bird, she's suddenly doing fantasy and magical realism. And I think that is very exciting. I also think the movie has some exceptional performances, not just from Barry Keoghan, but also from Nikia Adams, who plays the main girl in the film. And the last thing I would like to say is this movie, surprisingly, in some ways, not completely, but in some ways, reminded me of Aftersun. You know, after all, both Aftersun and this movie are both about a father and a daughter, about a clueless father who had his daughter when he was way too young and he doesn't really know how to be a father, but he's trying his best. Both movies have a great dance scene in the third act where the father and the daughter dance. And both movies have moments where characters go into the ocean and think, meditate, and deal with their inner demons. Let's put it that way. Now, a couple of criticisms that I have about this movie is I feel the movie gets a bit lost in the weeds in the middle part of the film. I feel like there's a subplot about Bird, this magical creature, maybe being the lost son of this guy. And I just felt that storyline, in my opinion, went nowhere, could have been caught. I feel like it just muddled a bit the story. And I also feel like the movie did a great job in the first two acts at balancing the fact that, oh, is Bird a real person? Is he a figment of the main character's imagination? And I like that. I like the fact that the movie keeps it ambiguous and it keeps you guessing. But I feel like in the third act, the movie crosses a line and Bird does something and interacts with characters and with the world in a way that it makes it pretty obvious whether or not he is or he's not a real thing or a figment of her imagination. And I think that took away a bit from the charm. I've thought about it ever since, and I think I get why he did it, and I understand, and I think I get the message. But, it, you know, in my opinion, it detracted a bit from the appeal of this movie. If I were to give it a score, I would give it a 7 out of 10. I think it's a very good movie. Now, the next movie I watched was All We Imagine Is Light, and this is a movie that there's honestly not much that I would say about this. It is a very slow, naturalistic, kind of neorealist movie about these two girls, you know, these two women that are, you know, still in their mid-20s, I believe, as they try to navigate life. You know, they are dealing with ex-partners and, you know, convoluted love lives, and they're trying to get money in order to pay rent, and they go to work and they interact with different people, they go on trips, and it's, you know, this is not truly a narrative-driven, story-driven movie. This is just a movie, a slice-of-life film where you're spending some time with these two characters. And if that is your sort of things, then definitely check this one out, because I believe you'll very much enjoy it. If you enjoy naturalistic, slow, meditative cinema, definitely check this one out. That said, for me, those sort of movies tend to be a bit hit or miss. I usually prefer more narrative, story-driven films. So in my opinion, this movie, at parts, was a bit boring, in my opinion, once again. And if I were to give it a score, I would give it a 6 out of 10. I think it's good. I think it's fine. It's set in Mumbai, by the way. This is an Indian film. It is set in Mumbai, and I do like a lot the way this movie depicts a city and the way it shows Mumbai. Like, you feel like Mumbai is this breathing, living thing, not just this backdrop, but like an actual organism. I like that. I like that a lot. But once again, a bit boring. So yes, 6 out of 10. Now, the next movie I watched is Rumours, which is directed by Guy Maddin. This is the very first Guy Maddin movie I've seen, and oh boy, I don't know. Okay, I'll let you know what I thought in a couple of seconds, but I'm sure you guys can guess it. This is a movie about the G7 summit. It is about a group of world leaders that are coming together to discuss the environmental issues that are harming the world and how they could potentially come together to solve these issues. And at first, I was really excited. You know, I thought the plot was interesting. You know, this group of political leaders come together and then they get lost in the woods. And, I imagine this could be like a very quippy, very smart, very witty screenplay about clashing ideologies and different opinions. And also like in a satire kind of way, showing the fallacies of these nations and the fallacies of these leaders. I thought this was all very, very compelling. That said, 15 minutes into the movie, I quickly realized that, that's not what this movie was. The whole shtick of the movie is basically, oh, look at these world leaders. Look at how out of touch and dumb they are. And they just do that over and over and over and over again, to the point where I was like, yes, we get it. You've made your point very clearly. You've told us countless times how dumb and out of touch these political leaders are. Do you have anything else to offer? Oh my God. But apart from that, also the humor, in my opinion, it just fell flat. You know, a couple of lines of dialogue made me laugh, mostly because I'm currently living in Canada. I'm here in Vancouver, and one of the world leaders is the Prime Minister of Canada, and there's a couple of Canada-related jokes that I found funny. But apart from that, oh my God, the humor just fell completely flat, especially towards the end, where like a lot of the humor just ends up getting replaced with mommies, like this mommies that are kind of jorking it. I wasn't having it. This movie really annoyed me. It's honestly one of my least favorite films of 2024. And, you know, maybe I should watch more Guy Maddin movies. I'm sure if I watch more of his films, I hope I find one that I truly, truly love. But this one wasn't it. And it's a shame because, you know, I like some of the actors involved in this film. You know, Cate Blanchett, Lydia Tarr herself. She's incredible. I love Blanchett. And then Charles Dance. I mean, Tywin Lannister. If you know me, you know how much I love Game of Thrones. Just for that alone, I was excited to watch this movie. And also, some of the visuals are kind of cool. You know, there's a giant brain in the woods. I thought that visual was nice. But yeah, the screenplay, the monotonous nature of the movie, and constant jokes that keep falling flat, just, you know, in my opinion, just make me give this movie a 2 out of 10. Yeah, I thought it was a very, very bad film. Now, the next movie I watched, and a great palate cleanser to Rumours, was Anora, directed by Sean Baker. And this movie follows a stripper that falls in love with the son of a very wealthy, very powerful Russian, Russian oligarch. And she falls in love with this kid who is very juvenile and is very immature, but, you know, he's got money, so she is interested. And, you know, the story goes from there. The family of the kid, the Russian oligarch family, they are, of course, opposed to their child, getting engaged to a stripper. And I guess you'll have to see where the story goes from there. And I thought this movie was truly incredible. As I mentioned, it is directed by Sean Baker, who has previously directed Florida Project, Red Rocket, Tangerine, other projects. every film that I've seen of him, I've at the very least thought it was great. And Anora is not the exception. In my opinion, Anora is the very best movie this guy has ever made. I thought the performances were truly exceptional. You know, we've heard a lot about Mikey Madison and Yura Borisov. You know, they've been present in most awards throughout the entirety of award season. But in my opinion, Mark Edelstein and Karen Karagulian, amongst others, deserve just as much recognition as Mikey Madison and Yura Borisov. Truly, this is a whole ensemble of incredible performers. I thought this film had a very poignant critique of the American dream, which, you know, is present everywhere in the film, is present in the screenplay, but also the colors, the use of color in this film. When you watch Anora, I would highly recommend you pay very close attention to the way Sean Baker uses the color red, white, and blue, which are, of course, the colors of the American flag. And he uses them in a very poignant and powerful way to either demonstrate the irony of the American dream, or, you know, its shortcomings, or its fakeness, or, you know, the illusion versus the reality. Truly, truly exceptional. Also, the structure of this film is something that I would very much like to highlight. I love a movie that is able to reinvent itself successfully in a way that feels earned. For example, Parasite was a great movie that reinvented itself halfway through the film, the first half being kind of a funny, lighthearted comedy, and then the second half of Parasite suddenly becomes into this very dark and messed up thriller. In my opinion, Anora reinvents itself not only once, but twice. The first act of Anora is just energetic, fast-paced, fun. It's euphoric. It's exhilarating. You're going on a ride with these characters. Then it completely reinvents itself, and the second act of this movie just becomes extremely chaotic and stressful. Anora suddenly turns into something that reminded me of a movie directed by the Safdie brothers. You know, the Safdie brothers, who of course did Good Time and Uncut Gems. You know, that is the sort of tone that the second act of Anora takes. And then the third act of Anora, once again, it completely reinvents itself, and in my opinion, Anora becomes truly depressing and sad in a very earned and poignant way. I love this movie. I thought it was really, really incredible. And if I were to give it a score, I would give it a 9 out of 10. Now, the next movie up on the list is My Favorite Cake. This is an Iranian movie. Oh my god. And in my opinion, this movie was very frustrating. And the reason why this movie was so frustrating is because the first two acts of the film were so truly incredible. You know, the first two acts, it follows this elderly woman who is very lonely, and she's just trying to find someone to spend the rest of her days with. She's trying to find a partner, anyone. You know, she's going around looking for elderly men who could potentially give her company, and you're rooting for her. You're so invested in her journey. You want her to succeed so badly, and then it's happening, and she gets it, and I was loving the first two acts of this movie so very much. You know, the title, My Favorite Cake, it was cute. But then, oh my god, but then the third act happens and it just goes in such a completely different direction. And this movie that was so great by being happy and optimistic and cute just becomes so dark, so depressing, and so sad. In my opinion, in a completely unearned and unnecessary way. And it made me sad because I was like, you had a great movie. You were doing an exceptional movie. Why did you mess with it? And I kind of saw it coming. I kind of saw it coming when it started happening. I was like, no, please, no. There's no way they're going to do that. But, you know, I kept telling myself there's no way they're going to do that. Like, the title of this movie is My Favorite Cake. Like, that's such a cute title. If you see the poster of this film, the poster is also cute and harmless. And you wouldn't expect anything dark to come out of this movie. But then, and then it did happen. And, you know, I still had faith that somehow they would reverse it, but they don't. And the movie ended, and it just left me sad. I just mentioned that I love it when movies reinvent themselves. This movie reinvents itself, but I think the difference is this movie reinvents itself in a way that feels unearned and unnecessary. And instead of me feeling like, ooh, look at this great new direction, I feel robbed of a third act that was set up in the first two acts that was just completely abandoned. I really hated the third act. That said, since then, I've read a couple of reviews on Letterboxd. that have made me think about the third act differently. I read this review that says, my favorite cake is a movie that was beautiful until it suddenly wasn't, set in a country that was beautiful until it suddenly wasn't. And I think if you read the film from that perspective of, yes, this whole film could be seen as a microcosm of Iran and what it went through, then there is some value there. That said, I'm not going to lie to you guys. I even though I respect it, I didn't very much enjoy the third act and the direction it took the film in. And if I were to give it a score, I would give it a 6 out of 10. I think it's fine. Now, the next movie I watched, so speaking of disturbing, the next movie I watched is called The Girl with the Needle. And this movie follows a seamstress in Copenhagen right after World War I. And it, you know, follows her struggling in her day-to-day life and, you know, her waiting to see if her husband comes back from the war, and she's trying to make a living. She's trying to survive, you know, to her best of her abilities. I thought this movie had some gorgeous cinematography. It had some incredibly immersive and haunting atmosphere. It had some very powerful commentary on motherhood and on the societal expectations that we put on women. That said, it is also extremely dark and disturbing. This is not a movie that I would recommend to anyone unless you are someone who finds value in seeing movies that are very disturbing. Me, personally, I see a lot of value in movies that are able to elicit a strong reaction from an audience, regardless of what the reaction is. You know, regardless of if it is laughter or fear or sadness or swooning or love or hatred, or in this case, the feeling of being disturbed. If a movie is able to evoke a feeling in a truly profound, deep way in an audience, I see a lot of value in that. So me personally, I value this movie. I respect it a lot. I think it's great. As I mentioned, the cinematography is exceptional, and the commentary on societal expectations on women, and you know the horrible sacrifices that a woman have to make. For me, that was all very powerful. But once again, do know this is extremely dark and disturbing. Let's just say that this movie is not just called The Girl with the Needle because she's a seamstress. She does other things with needles that are, oh boy. but yeah, if I were to give it a score, I would give it an 8 out of 10. I think it's a great movie. It's a very, very powerful film. Now, up next in the list, this is a movie that I've been dreading to talk about, and I don't really know how I'm going to do this in less than 3 minutes, but I guess I'll try my best. And the next movie is Emilia Perez. And I'll start by saying that I know that my opinion is not going to be the popular opinion. I know that the popular opinion is to hate on Emilia Perez and to talk about how bad it is. That said, when I started doing Take One, there was one thing that I promised myself, and that was that regardless of what my opinion was, regardless of my thoughts, I would always give you guys the truth. I would always tell you guys honestly what I felt and what I thought. And, you know, if you guys disagree with that, that is perfectly fine, but I'm not going to lie. I'm going to tell you guys what I thought. And the truth is, I really enjoyed Emilia Perez. I thought it was a truly amazing piece of cinema. Emilia Perez, for those of you who don't know, I don't know if there's much of you who don't know about Emilia Perez at this point, but it is it is a musical crime thriller character study set in Mexico that it follows this lawyer who is helping this person that used to be a cartel boss, a very ruthless cartel boss. This lawyer is helping this cartel boss fake his own death and start a new life as a woman, as Emilia Perez. I think what I love the most about this movie is just how bold, ambitious, and unique it truly is. I mean, it is not every day that you watch a movie that is simultaneously a musical, a crime thriller, a romance, a character study, an indictment against corruption, and so, so much more. It felt like a breath of fresh air while watching movies in a film festival. This felt like a jolt of electricity. Also, the songs in this movie, yes, it is a musical, but the songs in this movie are all so very different. I can't believe this is a musical where you have pop songs, you have rap songs, you have ballads, you have lullabies, you have funeral chants, this movie, regardless of how you feel, regardless of what you think, this movie swings for the fences. It is truly unique, it is truly original, and I enjoyed it. I was shocked by how original and unique it was. Now, Something that I do have to clarify is me personally, subjectively, I am very good. I am good at separating the art from the artist, you know, and I understand. I completely agree. Some of the things that Jacques Audiard, the director of this film, and some of the things that Carla Sofia Gascón, the lead actress in this film, some of the things that they have said and tweeted are just horrible and are so offensive and so out of touch. And I don't stand by any of those things that these people said. That said, as I mentioned, I am personally good at separating the art from the artist. And even though I don't stand by those things, I still have to admit that in my opinion, even though these people might not be the greatest, the movie they made, in my opinion, is exceptional, is one that I very much enjoyed, and her performance is still great. Yes, she said some horrible things, and as a person, I don't know how I feel about her. But as an actress, she gave an exceptional performance. And also, another caveat that I have to say when talking about Emilia Perez is I am not Mexican, and I am not a member of the trans community, so I completely recognize that there might be things that, from a point of ignorance, I'm not noticing. And I recognize that, and, you know, I allow myself to change my mind in the future if, you know, something comes to my attention that I haven't considered or that I haven't read about at this point. But yes, I have to be honest to you guys, I very much enjoyed Emilia Perez. I thought it was a truly unique breath of fresh air. I thought it was an exceptional piece of cinema that it dares to do things that no other movie has ever dared to do before. And if I were to give it a score, I would give it a 9 out of 10. I thought this movie was amazing. Now, the next film I watched is a German movie called Dying. Now, Dying is a German dark comedy about this family. And you're basically following different people in this family. There's like a son who is a musician, and then there's a mother who's going senile and dealing with her husband, and then there's a sister who's just lost and trying her best. And I like this movie. I thought it was very good. I thought it was a bit too long, and my big criticism with it is, even though I enjoyed most of the storylines, I enjoyed the mother storyline, I enjoyed the son storylines, I thought the sister storyline was a bit weak. It didn't fit in all honesty. So if I were to give it a score, I would give it a 7 out of 10. Now, it is time to go into another ad break. So let's do that right now.
We are UBC Electronica, and we love electronic music such as... Run for them life when I step into the jungle. We offer DJ workshops, open decks, pop-up parties, and more. Follow our socials such as Instagram, Discord, or join us through email, ubcelectronica@gmail.com.
This is the place that's in with the disco crowd.
Hello, friends. I'm Georgia.
And I'm Hannah.
And we're the hosts of CITR's very own Film Picnic.
This week, for the very first time, we're requesting your support of CITR and Discorder's Fun Drive initiative. By donating, you're helping keep local, independent, and alternative voices on air, like us.
We love CITR because without it, simply put, our show would not be possible. Whether they're connecting us with members of their network, lending us equipment, or offering technical support, CITR has maintained their generosity with resource sharing from the very beginning.
As a result of this, through the station and our show, we've been able to unite and foster our filmmaking community in ways we never could have imagined. If you enjoy the voices of independent radio and want to continue to hear more, consider supporting this year's Fund Drive by heading to donate to CITR.ca to contribute.
Again, that's donate to CITR.ca to support our Fund Drive 2025. Thanks!
Just consider for the masses, they're for a blessing.
Welcome back to Take One. This is your host, Juan Pablo Sá, talking to you from CITR 101.9 FM. Okay, moving on. The next movie is Dying, which is a German dark comedy that is following this dysfunctional family. It follows the story of a son who's a composer, a mother who is senile and is kind of dealing with her husband, and then this sister as she's just trying to survive her day-to-day. I like this movie. I enjoyed it. That said, I thought it was a bit too long, and the sister storyline, in my opinion, just it didn't quite work. If I were to give it a score, I would give it a 7 out of 10. I think it's good. Now, the next movie that I watched was Saturday Night, which was directed by Jason Reitman, who, of course, directed Juno, Tully, and most recently Ghostbusters Afterlife. And I thought Saturday Night was a great movie. You know, it tells the 90 minutes before the very first episode of Saturday Night Live. It is extremely exhilarating. It is very fast-paced. It is very chaotic, very energetic. And it is a movie that I very much enjoyed. You know, a lot of people have... I'm not the biggest SNL fan. I don't know much about its history. I don't know much about its first episode and how that story went. And I know that there are some people that are bothered about this movie being historically inaccurate. In my opinion, that is not an issue. Some of my favorite movies are very historically inaccurate. For example, Braveheart, The Social Network, Gladiator, 300, The Last Samurai, Apocalypto, Trial of the Chicago 7, First Man. All of these are films that are, yes, historically inaccurate. That said, if the historical inaccuracies that you add make for a better movie, I'm all for it. So that didn't bother me here in Saturday Night, and I thought this movie was great. You know, it is definitely made for SNL fans. I don't know much about SNL. I don't know how the first episode went. So a lot of references just flew way over my head. I truly didn't understand, but I still enjoyed it, and I was still in for the ride. And if I were to give it a score, I would give it an 8 out of 10. Now, the next movie I watched was I'm Still Here, which is a Brazilian film directed by Walter Salles. It is set in the early 1970s in Brazil during, you know, its military dictatorship, and it tells the story of the family of Rubens Paiva after he is kidnapped. Now, this movie, truly, truly exceptional. I truly loved it. This is a very powerful film that focuses on the idea of, you know, you never know you're living in the good old days until these days are over. I thought this film had exceptional performances by everyone, but particularly by Fernanda Torres. Oh my God, what a performance. But yeah, this is a movie that really, really crushed me, and I would highly recommend everyone to watch it. One of the best movies of the year, one of my favorites, and if I were to give it a score, I would give it a 10 out of 10. It is truly, truly exceptional. Now, the next movie that I watched, and the penultimate movie that I watched, was Night Bitch, and this is a movie about, you know, it's about the sacrifices that women have to make in order to become women, in order to become mothers. It is about the societal expectations, the expectations that society, fairly or unfairly, puts on women, how they're expected to sacrifice so much for this task. And it is, in my opinion, it was a very good movie with an exceptional performance from Amy Adams. Now, the movie is not subtle at all. It makes it very clear what the point is and what the film is trying to say. That said, in my opinion, you know, when did we decide that a movie has to be subtle in order for it to be exceptional? There are great movies that are very obvious in their messaging that, in my opinion, are still absolutely incredible. Doctor Strangelove, the message couldn't be more obvious. Schindler's List, Don't Look Up, All Quiet on the Western Front and Saving Private Ryan, Vice, The Trial of the Chicago 7, all of those are movies that are truly exceptional while also not really being subtle. So I don't get the whole criticism about Night Bitch, about people saying that, oh, it's too obvious in its messaging. For me, it worked, and I think the message is poignant, so I don't see a problem in that. Once again, great performance from Amy Adams. Very creative way of showing this point through a werewolf transformation. I do think some bits of the movie are a bit cheesy and campy. Considering that, if I were to give it a score, I would give it a 7 out of 10. Now, the very last movie that I watched at last year's Vancouver International Film Festival was fittingly named The End. This is a musical, a musical set in a bunker after the end of the world. And this movie is directed by Joshua Oppenheimer, who is a filmmaker that I very much admire. He's mostly known as a documentary filmmaker, and he has made some of the most harrowing, hard-to-watch, disturbing documentaries I've ever seen, which are The Act of Killing and The Look of Silence. I truly, those documentaries, I couldn't recommend them enough. So as soon as I heard that he was moving from documentary into narrative filmmaking and that he was doing this post-apocalyptic musical, I was so very excited. But in my opinion, this movie just ended up being dull, boring, and quite frankly, I think my biggest complaint is there's no story. And I know some people are going to come and say, well, actually, there is a story. You see, this girl from the outside arrives in the bunker and they start falling in love. Sure, that's a story. A girl from the outside arrives in the bunker and they start falling in love. In my opinion, that is not enough to warrant a 2-hour and 28-minute runtime. And the thing is, there could have been a better story. There could have been a story with them leaving the bunker after this outsider suddenly arrives. That said, they stay in the bunker. The musical numbers, in my opinion, are dull, repetitive, and all sound and feel the same. They all look the same. And yeah, this movie was just frustrating. I truly think there's a great movie in here, but it is not the one we got. If I were to give it a score, I would give it a 4 out of 10. I think it's a bad movie. I think it's a dull movie. But I think there's seeds of greatness in here. Now, that is everything I watched during last year's Vancouver International Film Festival. Thank you all for watching. Goodbye.